Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation. The mothers, after embracing their son, sat him on their laps. Due to pure affection, milk sprang from their breasts. They were overwhelmed with delight, and the tears from their eyes wetted the Lord. Purport. When Lord Krishna was at Vrindavan, even the cows would become moistened by affection toward him, and he would draw milk from the nipples of every affectionate living being. So what to speak of the stepmothers who were already as good as his own mother? That's the end of the purport. One sentence only. Although one sentence of Srimad Bhagavatam is more valuable than libraries full of, even compared to other Puranas, what to speak of absolutely mundane knowledge, or the so-called knowledge that is considered knowledge in the modern age. Here is being described what is technically called Vatsalyarati, the loving affection of the mother toward the son in this case, Putra. The son mentioned here is not just any son, but he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Christian religion, it's considered that God is the Supreme Father. And within Hinduism, the Shaktas, they like to worship the Supreme Mother. In worship of Krishna, not even in worship of the Vaikuntha worship, or not even in Ayodhya worship, it's open to everyone to worship the Supreme Lord as the Supreme Son. That is very common, even today, that often when people are married, they, I don't know about often, but sometimes they're presented the deity of Ladu Gopal, or this baby Krishna. And at least in some parts of North India, the parents, they would refer to their child as Gopal. He may have another name, but they like to think that our affection for our son should be like the affection of Nanda Baba and Yashoda Mai for Krishna. Of course, there is a lot of difference between the mundane love of mothers and fathers towards their sons and daughters and that of pure devotees toward Krishna. It appears to be the same. What's being described here, it is exceptional. You don't expect that when a grown son comes home, even if after he's been away for a long time, that the mothers will be so affectionate that milk will spring from their breasts. It's not expected that there will be so much affection. But the affection of mothers for their sons is what is called in common American a given. It's something that it's just expected. It's not expected that someone will say, oh, my mother loves me so much. So what? Everyone's mother loves them. Although in the modern age, That is also, as Prabhupada pointed out, that's becoming such a horrible situation in human society that the mothers who are expected to love their children are killing them instead. Millions every year in abortions. Of course, it's been rationalized that, well, it's not really a son yet. Not until they're born, not until they pop out. Up until that time, it's just a piece of flesh, just like the flesh you eat every day on your plate. So, it's not killing, it's just pregnancy termination is the euphemistic language used. Euphemistic, this means you say something in such a way that it doesn't sound so bad. It's called a euphemism. Just like they say ethnic cleansing. When they want genocide is called ethnic cleansing. You're just purifying the country. We'll purify it by killing a whole bunch of people that we don't like. So it doesn't sound so bad. Now, what's the word for abortion in Hindi? Garbhapat. Is that the word? Is it? You sure? It's a Sanskrit term, isn't it? It actually means a miscarriage. The term in Sanskrit is bruhatya. But they don't use that term. They say it's an induced miscarriage. It's not a miscarriage. Miscarriage means that just by accident, when the woman is pregnant, maybe she gets too excited or bumps too much on a car journey or something like this. So for whatever reason, that automatically, without it being induced, the pregnancy terminates. But to do that by there are various methods of abortion, which we won't discuss here. But that is called in Sanskrit bruhatya. It is killing the embryo, and that is one of the mahapatakas, the severe sins. There are so many different sins. Treading on an ant is also a sin. People often ask that, well, what about, you see you're vegetarians, but you're also killing the vegetables. So is it not as serious as killing the cows and eating them? So it may be killing the vegetables. Actually, many foods that vegetarians eat do not involve killing. Just like when you drink milk, that's not killing. When we take wheat or rice or fruit, it's not killing. Although in some cases it's killing. But it's not on the same level of sinfulness as killing an animal. Because the consciousness of the animal is more and suffering is more. Still it's sinful. Unless that's offered to Krishna. In which case that becomes purifying. So people adopt euphemistic language. Garbhapat. It's not garbhapat. It's bruhatya. It's murder. But they found a convenient word. So Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, this is a prominent symptom of Kali Yuga, that the mother is expected to be most loving. Srila Prabhupada also, in one discussion, Srila Prabhupada used to discuss so many different things, and his disciples used to bring all kinds of strange topics or unusual topics about the absurdity of the material, of modern life especially, to Prabhupada, to get Prabhupada's comment on these various absurdities. So Srila Prabhupada himself once brought up the topic of there was some competition. People have various, very strange ideas. So there was some strange idea. There should be a painting competition. And the subject is the look on a mother's face as she watches her child being killed. That's not a very nice subject, is it? But that's the kind of thing that people of tamasic culture, they think this is art. This is something, it's something expressive. In art, they think that art devoid of Krishna consciousness means they want to show the different emotions and expressions of people's disturbed minds. Maybe you've seen one of the most famous earliest modern artists was Picasso. So you'll see his so-called art. It's a madman has put all kinds of things together and it has no order or form and they call that art. If you can just go and throw a pile of garbage together and if you call it art, then you can sell it for a lakh of rupees. There was one artist in Manchester, in England. He was a famous artist. So he sold one piece of work, his art for £10,000. And it was all just all lines and squiggles and people coming in and has put all kinds of things together and it has no order or form and they call that art. If you can just go and throw a pile of garbage together and if you call it art, then you can sell it for a lakh of rupees. There was one artist in Manchester, in England. He was a famous artist. So he sold one piece of work, his art for £10,000. And it was all just all lines and squiggles and people coming looking saying, yeah, this is very good art. And then after he sold, he said, actually, I just gave my 4-year-old son some paints to play with and signed my name when he'd finished. And you're such a fool, you paid £10,000 for it. And you think it's art. Anyway, Prabhupada brought out this subject that the look on the mother's face, or maybe someone brought up the subject to him. What is so different, people? They showed their paintings. And then someone came up. The first prize went that the mother was covering her eye with her hand. And Prabhupada said, yeah, that's right, because the mother can't look. It's unimaginable for her. That feeling of love is so much. That's normal. Although nowadays, still today, people in India can't imagine that. That in the Western world, at least in America, when Prabhupada went there in 1966, in 1965, then he became a resident of New York. When was that? Late 1965, practically in 1966. So he found out that the young men and women didn't live with their parents because when they reached 18 or so, the parents would throw them out of the house and say, I looked after you long enough, now you're old enough to look after yourself, get out. So even today, people in India can't imagine that. But it's coming. All these things will come. It's becoming a big thing in India, Vridha Ashram, they called. Because the children are away in America, and they only have one or two children anyway, and the rest, they have a Garbhapat. And the children are away in America, and who's going to look after them in the old age? And then, even if they want to get married, the young girl will give a condition, I will get married as long, one condition, I'm not going to live with your parents and look after them. So these things are coming. If the children are in America are kind enough, they might send some money to put them in an old age home where they die. They live, no one cares for them and they're just waiting to die. They have nothing to do. They're miserable. Prabhupada also wanted to start a Vridha Ashram in Vrindavan. It's right there in his Bhagavatam purport. He said, we have a guest house and we invite all the old people of the world to come and live with us. And he says, we have one guest house and if necessary we can build another so that people can come. So Prabhupada wanted to give all the people the opportunity to live in Vrindavan Dham. Not just live there, but of course they should be engaged in devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada had this idea also, but we can see how that is changing now. That in modern life, there is no affection. I was surprised when I came here to Bangalore. Of course, I haven't been going out much. You might be happy to hear. But people don't smile much here. You know, everyone's very serious because they're all working hard and we've all got serious work here to do, and smiling isn't much encouraged because we're all very serious and we're all working. We've got important things to do. We're not smiling. Life is too serious. So if you go in the village, if you smile at someone, they're likely to smile back. And in Bangalore, they'll just look away. Especially if they're earning more money. It seems that there's an inverse proportion. Statisticians could work that out. That there's an inverse. The more money you earn, the less you smile. Some people smile to earn money. The models. No, actually, the models in the advertisements, they also don't smile, do they? It's like it's unfashionable to smile. So life is becoming miserable and they're advertising it as miserable. That to be miserable is good. As we were coming in the car, I saw this advertisement for some movie, and you know, it's just a normal movie, I suppose. Some guy with his face looks like it's all burned up with acid or something like that, and there's this look on his face like he's really harassed. And why do people want to go and see that? They're already harassed themselves. And then they want to go to see a movie and see other people. Maybe they can feel some empathy that I also feel like that. I don't know. It's very strange. Very strange. Modern life is very, very strange. Did anyone notice? People's attitudes, very strange. Actually, the whole material world is very strange. Even this love for the mother, for the son, which is highly lauded, it's also very strange if we consider that actually that relationship, it's not real. The real relationship is with Krishna, and we have so many sons and daughters and mothers and fathers in so many births. It's strange. Even this love for the mother, for the son, which is highly lauded, it's also very strange if we consider that actually that relationship, it's not real. The real relationship is with Krishna, and we have so many sons and daughters and mothers and fathers in so many births. So it seems natural, mother's love is natural, but in another way, it's unnatural and perverted also. Inasmuch as this, it's simply another phase of envy of Krishna. And we see that many times the parents who so much love their children, but then if the child wants to become Krishna conscious, then they become very upset and sometimes they disown the child. Because they're so much loving the child, but they see that this is my life insurance policy. That when I get older, he's going to look after me. And then they think that, well, if he becomes Krishna conscious and becomes a sadhu, then he won't look after me. And they think, well, it's all right if you become, you can become Krishna conscious, but not too much. But there's no too much in Krishna consciousness. Modern psychologists, they might analyze that the mothers who are seeing Krishna and milk is springing from their breasts, even though Krishna is a grown man, that's too much. It's all right for the mother to love their child, but that's a bit too much, isn't it? That when he's fully grown, that you're still seeing him like your young child, and so much that the milk comes from the breast. I don't know if there's, maybe a doctor could tell us, but I don't know if that happens in material relationships. Not in Bangalore, probably. There's no affection. But has anyone ever heard of that? That the mother, just simply by seeing their son, immediately the milk starts to flow? I suppose it must be for babies. It must be, because otherwise, how does the milk? The milk must be. You know, the cow, when they. Maybe you don't know because you're city people. But when they went, before they milk the cow, first they keep the calf there, isn't it? And then the cow likes to give more milk because they're thinking it's for the calf. The milk is meant for the calf out of affection. They want to give it to the calf. So mothers, out of affection for their child, the milk may form in their breast, but you wouldn't expect it of an old, grown-up person. That is described here. It seems to be too much affection. I mean, how can life go on if we read about we hear about the descriptions of Krishna that during the Brahma Vimohana Leela, Brahma, he stole the calves and the cow had boys, and Krishna took those forms. So when the gwalas, the cowherd men, they were taking out the cow, they were herding the cows on the top of Govardhan, and below Govardhan, their sons were herding the calves, and all the cows, when they saw their calves, they ran away, even though the cowherd men tried to restrain them. They ran down out of affection for their calves, and the cowherd men, they were surprised, they were frustrated that how is it that we can't control the cows? We're cowherd men and we can't control our cows. It was humiliating for them, because that's all they have to do. That's their whole job that they're trained up for from childhood, by herding the calves, is to control the cows. And that's, if a cowherd man can't control his cows, then what kind of a cowherd man is he? So they were feeling very frustrated, and they ran down after the cows, and then they saw their own sons, and they forgot all about the cows, and they started petting their sons. Now, one father who wasn't there was Nanda Maharaj, who was the father of Krishna and Balaram, foster father, we can say. So Balaram, he was surprised that, this is a bit too much. We never saw like that. They see their sons every morning and evening, and they're affectionate, but they're so affectionate, they forgot all about their cows, and now the calves are drinking all the milk, and they're supposed to stop that. But they've forgotten all about that, and they're simply petting their sons. What's going on here? And then Balaram realized it must be the Maya, that is, it's Krishna's Maya. Something unusual is going on here. Balaram realized, because he wasn't present on the day when the calves were stolen and the cowherd boys were stolen. So he didn't know. Although he knows everything, he didn't know. So he realized this kind of affection is only possible in relationship to Krishna. So Balaram, he's Adi Guru. So he could understand that he's a good philosopher. Apart from being a cowherd boy, he's a good philosopher. So he could understand. He's also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that should be known. He knows everything. So he could understand that this affection is only possible in relationship to Krishna. It's not even among pure devotees, they love each other, but the Vishai Vigraha, or the object of love, is Krishna. And devotees love each other in relationship to Krishna, not independently of that. When one disciple, he was so much focusing on Prabhupada. Prabhupada, I love you, you're everything to me, you mean everything to me. But Prabhupada, he detected there's something wrong with this. He was saying, no, not to me, to Krishna. Certainly love is there for Guru, but because Guru is a representative of Krishna, not as the Mayavadis, they misconstrue the understanding that Guru is God by wanting to take the position, Guru Sakshat Param Brahma. We shall qualify that by saying Guru Sakshat Brahma Pratinidhi. He partakes of the nature of the Supreme Lord, because he kintu prabha yaf priya eva tasya, unto he who is very dear to Krishna, therefore to be worshipped as good as Krishna, not independently of Krishna. So Vaishnava relationships, they are centered on Krishna. Krishna is the object of love. Now we find that Narottam Das Thakur, in his quintessential kirtan, means he's given the essence of Gaurya Vaishnav Siddhanta and Rasa Siddhanta, he focuses everything Sri Rupa Manjari Pada, Shemora Shampada. He says that the lotus feet of Sri Rupa Manjari, the gopi Sri Rupa Manjari, that is my wealth. And he goes on to say, that is my all in all. That is my bhajan, my pujan, my vrata, tapa. That is everything I do. That is simply focused on Sri Rupa Manjari Pada. So why not Krishna? That's focused on Rupa Manjari, but not exclusively. He says, this is my wealth, but why is that so? Because Rupa Manjari, the gopi, she is a servant of Radharani. And Radharani is anayaradito nunam Bhagavan Haririshwaraha. She, her aradhana, she is not in and of herself the ultimate truth, but she is the supreme aradhika. Radhika is the supreme aradhika, the supreme worshipper or servant of Krishna. Krishna is the center. So, in Gaurya Vaishnavism, at the highest level, it may appear that Radha is the center, because everything is directed toward Radha, but then she directs everything toward Krishna. So, ontologically, Krishna is the center of all affection. And affection which is directed elsewhere, that is simply the cause of material bondage. That is why, even in relationship with one's guru, it is enjoined, don't be sentimental. Even a sentimental relationship that directed toward the right person for the wrong reason, at least it's directed towards the right person. The right person in as much as he directs others to Krishna. But if the affection is for the wrong reason, then if the proper understanding isn't there, then that affection will not develop in the right way. Just like Srila Prabhupada, when he came back to India after being in America, and he was visiting his relatives in Calcutta, and they treated him as their relative, because that's what they all, he was from their perspective an old man, and he'd had his family. It was pretty, not very happy family life, you could say. Prabhupada, not as disturbed as in the modern age, but he didn't really get on with his wife that well. And eventually he left her, and his sons were not very happy with that. That why you left us. But anyway, he was doing his business, and there were ups and downs. Sometimes the business went fairly well, sometimes it didn't do well, and then when it really went down a lot, and he was getting older, and then he just left everything. And then we heard that he'd gone to America. So that's good. That's nice. Welcome home, Babu. Oh, now he's a sannyasi. So bow down. But treating him more or less like, they knew him like this. And it wasn't likely that they were going to change. So they were not likely to hear him. I believe in the Bible it's stated that a prophet is not respected in his own village. That people think that Nengo Pancha, this Bengali saying, that someone he's running around in the village when he's 5 years old, he's running around naked. Later on, he goes to school and is a success and becomes a high court judge. He's a high court, his relative in the village is a high court judge, Nengo Pancha. He's just, this Panchanana has become, he's just one of us. He's just running around in the village naked. I remember him like that. Well, he's not like that anymore. But they did, Prabhupada's relatives tended to see him like that. That was their misfortune. They could not hear from him. You could say it's their good fortune that they had so much association with him, but actually they didn't have association with him. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there's one anecdote that one pundit, he came in for some chastisement. He came to some festival at the Gauriya Math. And this pundit was very fond of Malpur, which is standard preparation in Gauriya Vaishnav Mahotsav. Mahotsav means Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to criticize. He used to say, Malpur Mahotsav. The main thing is, everyone comes, they have a little kirtan and lots of Malpur. You know what that is? Malpur, they say that in Hindi also. It's a kind of sweet. It's, in Bengal, it's made with rice flour and fried and then soaked in sugar water. So he used to create, he said, the real Mahotsav is we should have lots and lots of Harikatha. That Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he also declared that one time all the Babajis around him, that tomorrow is Sanatan Goswami's Mahotsav, so tomorrow we'll have a feast. Then how can we have a feast? How you have to organize it, you have to invite people, you have to arrange ingredients, you have to arrange cooking. To arrange cooking, nowadays you arrange a festival, you go in the Kalyan Mandapam, everything's there, but traditionally you're in the village, you have to dig holes in the ground, and then you make the fires, and you have to bring the big pots and cook. It's a big, just to make the holes in the ground takes so much time. To dig out the holes for cooking. So, how can we organize? When we don't have any money and we're just beggars, he said, we'll have a festival. And what are we going to give all the people for a feast? He said, nothing. We won't feed them anything. We'll just chant all day. That will be our feast. So, that might not be very popular if we're to advertise. If we did that, if we advertise big festival, so many people will come. And then the festival is we're going to have long lectures. Next time, no one will come. So anyway, this pundit was eating lots of malpur, and one of the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, seeing this, he was also a pundit by the name of Paravidya Bhushan. He was supposed to be ornamented with the decoration of transcendental knowledge. So he said that you just consider, are you eating or the prasad is supposed to eat you? He said, tumi ki, apne ki bhokta na prasad bhokta. Are you the bhokta or the eater or the enjoyer? Two words are the same, to eat and to enjoy. So he became upset, as pundits often do, because pundit means, I know everything, who can tell me anything? I read so many things, so you can't tell me anything. So afterward he wrote a letter that, I didn't come just for the malpurs, my wife's a very good cook, I've eaten many malpurs in my life. What did he mean by that? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur commented that not many people could understand what is the meaning of this. Because most people are in the consciousness of aham bhogi, ishvaraham aham bhogi, I am the enjoyer. But real consciousness that is that prasad seva. We are not the enjoyers of prasad. Prasad is not some, Krishna prasad is not something to be enjoyed. Of course, enjoyment, but enjoy as a servant, not as an enjoyer. So, that incident was there, that how we are always to see ourselves as the servant. Now getting back to this subject, this matri bhav in Krishna Leela, this feeling of parental affection, motherly affection, it seems to be too much. But actually that is the standard. In the material world, it cannot come to that level because the affection is placed on the wrong object and in the wrong way. If one has the sentimental affection without knowledge cannot actually be affection. If one is not actually aware of who Krishna is, then one cannot actually love him. Before rasa, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost shastra, that is tatvagyan and rasagyan. Tatshrinvatam rasagyanam swadu swadu pade pade. The rasagyana, which is in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is to be relished at every step, that is on the basis of tatvagyan, of understanding who is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So similarly, like I was saying with Guru, one may be, have sentimental or fanatical affection, but that sentiment or fanaticism, that means without philosophy, without knowledge, and Guru is to teach the philosophy and give the knowledge, so that should not be encouraged. Otherwise what we see, sometimes people who are fanatical about their Guru, then when the Guru doesn't indulge them in their sense enjoyment or what they want, when the Guru tells them something that they don't like, then they turn fanatically against him. There was an instance of this in Bangalore. You may be aware of this. Someone who was fanatically, only my Guru, he's the only one, and then throw him out. So proper understanding is required. This attachment to the right object for the wrong reason cannot develop into pure attachment. That's why one has to hear. The primary function of Guru, or practically you can say the only function, is to impart transcendental knowledge. Impart means not just by speaking, but make sure that it stays, and therefore the chastisement comes also. I was just listening to a lecture of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who was well known for being extremely heavy. And in the lecture he was saying that I was just chastising one of my disciples so much, and afterwards I was thinking that, you know, maybe that was too much. And then he said, right after that, I listened to a Prabhupada lecture in which Prabhupada was quoting Chanakya Pandit as saying that you can't chastise too much. The duty of the Guru is to chastise, even if there's nothing wrong. Still he should chastise. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj was telling some stories of Buddhist gurus who used to do actually ridiculous things, like some Buddhist guru would have his disciple build a house, and then before it's finished, tear it down again. When he finished tearing it down, build it again, and then tear it down again. And Buddhism is an imitation of Vedic culture without the proper knowledge, and therefore they kind of do the same things, but it's all wrong because they don't have the proper knowledge. There's no use to build a house and tear it down. The guru may give disciples tests, but something useful in Krishna's service. But because Buddhists don't believe anything is real, then if everything they do is meaningless. And the guru he may tell the disciple, build a house and tear it down again. It's meaningless, yeah. And then he's supposed to realize the whole material world is meaningless. I don't know, something like that. So, but the knowledge is to be imparted, not just a passive agent. As Sarva Bhavana Prabhu, my godbrother, asked Srila Prabhupada that why do you say that the person Bhagavat is more important than the book Bhagavat? Prabhupada said, because he can pull your ear. You can read the book, and think, okay. And don't, but the guru will not say, okay. I'm okay, you're okay. I'm okay, you're not okay. That's what he will say. So, is that affection? This, again, from the pastimes of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one of his leading disciples, actually he was initiated by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but under Bhaktivinoda Thakur's guidance, he accepted Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur practically as his guru, and he was the first sannyasi initiate of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj. So, one disciple of Odulomi Maharaj, who was another disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was writing all different life stories of different devotees. And he wrote that of various disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also, including his own, that of his own Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Keval Odulomi Maharaj, Srimad. But in the, when he wrote about Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj, obviously you could see from his writing, he actually had more of, there seemed to be more feeling than he had for his own Guru Maharaj. And he wrote about Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj that he would chastise everyone so much, even for the smallest thing. And but he was so much affectionate that he because he trained us. This Shuta Kirti Prabhu, did he come here? Shuta Kirti Prabhu? No. Harishori Prabhu must have come here. He must have come here? No? Must have, no? He didn't come here? No? These are the two personal servants of Srila Prabhupada. They're famous among the followers of Srila Prabhupada. These two especially. He had many others, but these were the only two that lasted. Because mostly people couldn't tolerate Prabhupada, actually. They found him intolerable. So, Shuta Kirti Prabhu, he said that Srila Prabhupada used to shout at me and it was not pleasant. He could be extremely heavy. Tamal Krishna Maharaj must have shouted at you. He shouted at all his disciples and everyone else too. Was it pleasant at the time you were feeling? He was extremely heavy. Everyone knows. So Shuta Kirti Prabhu said that, but I'd do anything to have the chance to have Prabhupada shout at me again. Because that kind of affection that was there, the affection that he wanted to see that his disciples become purified. He couldn't tolerate that they were negligent or not properly situated in Krishna consciousness. So in the modern age, the idea of affection has become very shallow. Everything has become very shallow in modern life. That in modern American culture, people are trained to smile it. In the shops and in business, they're trained to smile and be, because they worked out that if you smile at people, they're more likely to buy your product than if you are nasty to them. So they smile. And you're trained to smile, but it's not a smile of affection. It's a smile of, let me get the money out of your bank balance and into my bank balance. It's false. So like that, by analysis, we can understand that even the affection of the mother for the child in this material world, that is also false. Although it appears, Prabhupada said that's the closest thing to pure love. But it's false. And again, another disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who was also extremely heavy. Prabhupada was very heavy, but Prabhupada said, I'm 80% more lenient than my Guru Maharaj. Can you imagine? No, we can't imagine. It's not within our imagination. So, Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, in his prayers to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, was stating that the affection of parents for their children, it's like highway robbers. He gave that. It's like dasyuvriti. Just like here in India, it's a common thing. You go on the train, and people will say, "You want to take some paratha." Say, no, take a little. And then you wake up later and all your belongings are gone. Because it seems impolite to refuse. They're affectionately offering you no, it's homemade. We put some special ingredients in it. So, you don't want to refuse because people are affectionately offering you something, but that affection is actually meant to cheat you. So, this may sound shocking, that the parents, they want to cheat you. It's actually like, it's compared to highway robbers. But it is cheating if, here comes the qualifier, if the child is not seen as spirit soul, who it is my duty to train in Krishna consciousness. If the center is not seen as Krishna, if we think this child is for me to enjoy, I'll serve and later I will enjoy. The child will serve me. Or I will enjoy seeing my child become a success in the world and then I can show all my relatives. You see? My son became a success. So, for social prestige and all these things. So without that, without preaching to our children, everyone can preach. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told everyone to be a guru. Amar agyai guru hoya. Become a guru. So, you may think, well, how can I become a guru? If I'm a housewife, my children are crawling all over me all the time, how am I going to be a guru? But you can preach to your children. Not just engage them in arti, but preach to them also. Tell them, you are eternal spirit soul. You're a servant of Krishna. We don't belong in this material world. I'm your mother. I'm not going to be your mother forever. That relationship is not the real relationship. If you have any love for me, then you should offer that, you should understand that love, that should be channeled to Krishna. You love me because I'm part of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so many people came to see him out of affection, thinking that he is a nice young man. He told them, Jodi ama prati sneho take shabaka, tobe Krishna beti rikta na gaibaya. If you love me, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, then you just glorify Krishna. Again, he's putting Krishna in the center. So the mothers of Krishna, they literally had the opportunity to put Krishna in the center. Krishna was literally the center of their lives. Personally, Srila Prabhupada directed us toward Krishna. Everyone loved Srila Prabhupada. People were astonished at the airports when Prabhupada came, how his disciples, they would literally forget everything all around them. There are other passengers, and there's rules of the airport. They were just like the cows charge down Govardhan Hill towards their calves. Not they didn't even see there are big stones in the way or that the cowherd men are trying to control. They just forgot everything and ran toward their calves. So in the airports when Prabhupada came, it was like that. They just forgot, you know, there's policemen trying to control them and they didn't even see the policemen. And the policemen are shouting, they didn't even hear the policemen. All they saw was Prabhupada. And they're performing huge kirtans and crying and jumping up and down because Prabhupada gave them Krishna. Prabhupada directed them toward Krishna. And they were experiencing Krishna. So, Prabhupada, he always told us that he gave us that hope, real hope, that if we make Krishna the center of our lives now, then certainly we will have the opportunity upon leaving this body. Tyaktva dehaṁ punarjanma naiti mām eti so arjuna. We will go to Krishna and be with Krishna and live with Krishna, and dance with Krishna, and talk with Krishna. As Srila Prabhupada said, my ambition, I just want to go to Golok Vrindavan and steal Krishna's lunchbox. So, who can do that? Who's thinking of that? So this kind of affection is centered on Krishna. He is Akila Rasamrita Murti. He is the form of all genuine affectionately relationships. So, Golok Vrindavan is governed by love. This material world is governed by rules. In this material world, even if we are to develop love of Krishna, we have to follow the rules of devotional service. And I believe that one rule here is that the lecture should have already finished. Is it? No? It's not a rule. You don't have any rules. No rules. There are no rules in this temple? All right. So, is there any questions? You can take them now. All these things should be understood properly. It's not that we're going to tell the mothers to throw away their babies and just love Krishna. No, if you do that, then Krishna will not be pleased. My husband's Maya. That's true. He's Maya if you think that ultimately he's my husband. But as long as we're in this world, we have to follow the rules of this world. So, all these things should be understood properly. It's not that we're going to tell the mothers to throw away their babies and just love Krishna. No, if you do that, then Krishna will not be pleased. My husband's Maya. That's true. He's Maya if you think that ultimately he's my husband. But as long as we're in this world, we have to follow the rules of this world. So one has to see one's present situation, act within that, and develop Krishna consciousness at the same time. So anything? No questions. All right. So, I just have one question. Do we have the other mic? Doesn't work? All right. I'll repeat the question.
Regarding the Bruhatya.
Yeah. Bruhatya.
Exemptions where?
Are there exemptions? Are there exemptions where Bruhatya is not Hatya? People say, well, you know, the girl was raped, or it's dangerous, the mother may die. Are there exceptions? I asked this question when one of my disciples in Europe, who's a doctor actually. Yeah, Brunhatya. Are there exemptions where Brunhatya is not Hatya? People say, well, you know, the girl was raped, or it's dangerous, the mother may die. Are there exceptions? I asked this question when one of my disciples in Europe, who's a doctor actually, she's a doctor and her husband's also a doctor, she was told that the child in your womb has no kidneys. So the child will die as soon as it leaves the body, so you might as well have an abortion now. So then they wrote to me and asked me what to do, because anyway the child's not going to live. So then I made some inquiries, is there any allowance in Shastra for abortion under any circumstances? The answer came, no, we don't know of any circumstance where it's allowed. As Prabhupada said, you cannot give life, therefore you have no right to take it away. So I advised her, you go through with the pregnancy, and for some reason Krishna has sent you that soul to be in your womb, for some reason that we don't understand. But anyway, as long as the child is there, you chant loudly, you read Krishna book loudly, and she did. And she went through the 9 months, and first the nurses she had to enter the hospital, and the nurses thought she was crazy, but eventually they respected that. And she delivered the child, and within 2 hours or something like that, the child passed away. And when she got the advice, she said, yes, actually, I didn't want to abort the child, even though there's no chance for the child to live. So, she was very happy with that. And if she had not done that, she would have been very unhappy, no doubt, all her life. And not only would have she been unhappy, but she would have been involved in sinful activity. Another time, a disciple of mine, who's also a doctor, he asked about his wife, that she's told that it's a dangerous pregnancy. So, and we should abort. So I said, well, if it's a dangerous, there's no allowance for abortion. So dangerous, well, that danger is given by God, no doubt, all her life. And not only would have she been unhappy, but she would have been involved in sinful activity. Another time, a disciple of mine, who's also a doctor, he asked about his wife, that she's told that it's a dangerous pregnancy. So, and we should abort. So I said, well, if it's a dangerous, there's no allowance for abortion. So dangerous, well, that danger is given by God with no shastrically allowed means to avert it. So better you go on with the pregnancy. So they went on and there was no problem and delivered the child. It was a healthy child. They always tell you it's dangerous because they want rich people's pregnancies, or at least middle class people, they're always dangerous because they want to have cesarean operation and make more money. Poor people, theirs are not dangerous. They just go to the government hospital or in the field when they're working. They go out to the field and come back with a baby. So now they made 40 days bed rest. That's another thing to make more money. You can't leave the hospital for 40 days. We captured you. You have to pay 2,000 rupees a day. Otherwise, very dangerous. So, is there any allowance for abortion? No. We say, what about all the women who are raped? And then we say, why are they getting raped? Why are they running? Why are they going out on the streets alone? Oh, women should have equal rights. Then you have the equal right to get raped also. And don't complain. Of course, it happens at home also. Anyway, these are unpleasant subjects, but you're in Bangalore, so in America you can discuss all these things openly. Prabhupada did. So, in traditional Indian culture, you wouldn't discuss these things. There wasn't that much need to also. Modern life means killing. So much killing. Don't add to it. Then, any other question?
Maharaj, a lot of people use all kinds of insecticides, pesticides.
Many people use insecticides and pesticides. At home. Prabhupada said, if you keep clean, then they won't come. That's the general formula. It can be, we once rented, I was in a house in Bangkok, Thailand, which was in a not very clean area. And although we kept the house clean, still there were so many cockroaches and rats. So, Prabhupada allowed that in the deity area, that such things can be used if there is no other alternative. If the cock, what would happen? They'd put the offering on the altar and then the cockroaches, as soon as they put it, the cockroaches would come. You see that in many temples even now. That's why this Dayanand Saraswati, he started the Anarya Samaj, because he didn't have faith in Murti Puja. When he saw he was doing Jagaran and Shivratri and everyone fell asleep and they saw the offerings for Shiva, they were being eaten by mice. Then he lost all. Then he became Anarya because of this. So Prabhupada said that in that circumstance it can be done. But generally you don't use pesticides because that's the pests are dangerous for health, and the pesticides are more dangerous for health, even for yourself.
Also, these mosquito repellents.
Mostly they're mosquito killers, aren't they? That all out means it kills all the mosquitoes. So it's better not to use them. They're killing the mosquitoes. That means it's also poisonous for you. Right? If it's killing the mosquito, then it's having some bad effect on your own system. Therefore, use mosquito nets. Or there's this dhuna. Do you say that in, not in Kannada? You got the dhuna, it's called in Bengali. Yeah, you get the coconut and you put some different. You fan it like this and all the smoke comes. And then you do that at dusk, what should you do? Now last night was the last of the deep down, but actually every night at dusk, then you have to light the lamp, blow the conch, and then put the dhuna. All these things, these are ladies' duties, but they're out at the office. So, what are they going to do? No more gharwali. Now they're all office wali.
Glad you were mentioning about this chastisement.
Do we take chastisement as special mercy? Well, if everyone chastises us, then it won't be special mercy. All mercy is special. Well, if one is advanced enough, he can do. There's also a consideration of maryada, or limit. Who should chastise who? It shouldn't be that the disciples chastise the guru, as happens sometimes nowadays. Or the children chastise the parents, as also happens. So that's also a consideration. Regarding what, sorry? Gun hatya. You're going to ask, is it, your question is going to be, you're going to give some circumstance and say, is it not proper to do it in that circumstance? And the answer is, it is improper under all circumstances, whatever circumstance you come up with. If there's no allowance in Shastra, then it's sinful. Shastra only says that it's sinful. It doesn't give any allowances. Now, you may not agree with that, but you're not God. And God, He gives the Shastra, He gives the rules, and we have to play according to His rules. That's why women are supposed to be protected. That's why we're not for independence of women. It's demoniac. The idea that women should be free is demoniac because it removes their protection. And when the protection is removed, then all sinful activities come in society. And therefore questions like this come. Is it? It's another question? You're not going to ask under what circumstance it can be allowed? To come out from the sin, stop, don't do it anymore and chant Hare Krishna. But don't do it and think I'll chant Hare Krishna afterwards. It happens in our movement. I know of several cases, sorry to say, of people who are initiated and they send for the abortion because we can't afford another child. It's demoniac. It does happen. That's why we have to understand very clearly that modern society is demoniac. Don't go by the standards of modern society. If we say women's independence is demoniac, people will protest. Not only women, men will also protest. But why are you mistreating the women? They should also have their rights. They should have the right to be raped. So, but we should understand that modern society, it's demoniac. Because they don't know what the goal of life is, and therefore what they think is right is based on total misconceptions. That's why we have to take knowledge from Shastra. Yeah. Can you tell us more about marital relationships, especially with regard to the devotees? More. Well, it's a huge subject, isn't it? Material relationships. I saw it said marital. Material relationships in regard to devotees. Yeah, well, to see, you have to be more specific. Otherwise, you know, you could. Material relationships in relationship to devotee. It means a material relationship with a devotee means to see the devotee not in relationship to Krishna, in relationship to who I consider myself to be in terms of a product of this. He is a product of this material world. I'm a product of this material world. He is someone who can assist in my sense gratification. I have to try to exploit him, or otherwise he will try to exploit me. These are material relationships. So we see that among devotees also. So many problems have been caused in our movement by